people that the meeting is being recorded, and try to remember to announce yourself in your district, like I just didn't do. So, do we have any guests here today?
We have our LEARN staff here. We have Christine Pemberton, our HR director, Mike Belden, our chief financial officer, and I believe, obviously, and our very important Donna Wurst is here taping, recording our meeting. So I think that's it for LEARN side.
Okay, well, I guess I should start also by saying Happy New Year to everyone. So let me extend that as well. Any public comment from our non-existent public? All right.
We're good.
Reading and review of any correspondence?
I have none at this time from on my end.
Well, we're moving right along.
Yes.
Next will be our superintendent's perspective with Michael.
Yep.
I'd like to say a few words.
Sure. So thanks, Mike.
Go ahead, Kate.
I just want to say, for those of you who don't know, Mike Belden is our chief financial officer. And, you know, once we had the final audit finished, we like to come to our board and give them an overview of the fiscal state of the agency. So this is something we do every January. So I just want to say thank you to Mike ahead of time for taking the time to look at our finances and create this presentation for us. So Mike, I'll be your guide on the side. Just let me know when you're ready.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. So if we want to just flip to the next page. So what I'm going to do today is just give you a brief overview of where we are from a fiscal standpoint. And I'll say that, that the agency right now from a fiscal standpoint is strong. You know, we obviously will get a little bit into the COVID situations, but overall we have a relatively young folks at LEARN, but the experience that they're bringing is fantastic for us to grow with and for the future. So, you know, I think that as a group, we're excited, and I think we're in a good place when we take a look long-term. So we'll go through, obviously, this here is the areas that we service.
Computer.
Donna, you want to hit mute on that one? I can't do it.
Okay. Which one's it coming from, you know?
Hmm. It's. I think it's Dale's phone number.
Okay.
You can hit mute on that.
Yeah. I'm just
looking
to find it.
Grandma.
I am curious. It's always nice to hear. Yes. I said there was no public.
Hello. Hold that.
Okay. All right, Mike. So this is the area that we service, and you know, we're. Our goal and what we hope to do in the future is continue to listen to find out where there's opportunities for us to help. So as you'll see, we started doing some of that, but we definitely want to do more of that. This here is our mission framework. I'm not going to go into it. Kate, do you want to just do a little bit update?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's so critical is just this idea of constant continuous improvement in this agency. And we have the three goals. Goal one relating to our schools and programs. Goal two being our services for the region. And goal three, just our back office operations and making sure that they are efficient and cost effective for the region. But really, you know, driving us to constantly push ourselves to figure out how we can play a role in supporting the region and really coming to that vision of all students having access to high quality education and opportunities.
So now I'm going to go into our revenues by source. So RESCs are different in the sense that school budgets work off more on the expenditure side, and we work more off on the revenue side. So if we don't create revenue, we don't, you know, we're not going to be in existence. So what we do is we break down where is our revenue coming from, and we break down buckets of local, state, federal, Goodwin, and other is miscellaneous. But let me just walk you through a little bit of the local, because we'll have another slide by departments. But obviously our largest revenue source is going to be our magnet school funding and, you know, the local tuition from that. In addition to that, our SSS, our special ed department, is a huge driver in our revenue at Learn. They account for, about $16 million of our local revenue. And then we have various programs, Magnet Kingdom. We have some virtual learning programs. We have early care. We have transportation. We have food service. All of those different buckets come out to almost half of our agency revenue is derived from all these various programs that we're doing either at the schools or we're doing workshops. We're doing professional development in that regard. So that's our local piece. Our state piece is 30% or $18 million. And again, the bulk of that comes from the state magnet money. That was about $12 million. And then we get state grants for school readiness, almost $2 million. TFS preschool, we get money from the state for that. We have magnet school transportation money that we call EDO 2-1. Money comes from the state for us to transport some kids to our schools there. And then the capital project Ocean Ave as the first project, which was about a $7.1 million project for our regions. We had kicked in $1.9 million originally. And then in addition to that, our 20% funding, we get reimbursed on the whole project at about 80% of what we call our eligible costs. So those monies come into us from the state. And again, we have Birth to Three. We have some state contracts with them as well. Our federal piece is about 6%, almost $4 million. And that's the largest piece there is our MSAP grant. We're in our fourth year of a five-year MSAP grant. And that's almost $3 million for last year. And then we have the Title I's, Title III's, all the federal titles. That's almost a little over 600,000. And then in the food service, we get money from the federal government for a free and reduced reimbursement there, and that accounts to almost $400,000. So that's our federal. Let me see if I'm missing anything else there. We get, that's primarily all of our federal monies. Then we have Goodwin. So we have Goodwin almost 15% or $9 million. And that's the reimbursement from Goodwin for the salary and the benefits for all of our teachers up at Riverside and CTRA. And then this year, you'll see for next year's report, we have CTRA, the high school, but we now also have a sixth grade. And then other $800,000, almost $900,000. We charge our schools for copier leases, postage, phone, IT support for all the students. And that came out to about $900,000. So our total is $60,838,000 on the revenue side. And that's by, you know, source. And then you'll see the next slide is going to be by department. So here, as I mentioned, our main drivers are going to be the magnet school programs, $36 million, and special ed, $16 million. So let me go through a couple of the other ones. So for magnet school, so all the schools, the tuition, and the various programs that go with it, and also all the magnet school programs, they'll either get local funding or state funding. Federal funding or state funding. So all those dollars are thrown into that magnet school program bucket. see what else we have. Yeah, so that accounts for the largest amount. The special ed services, again, that's a main driver for us when we take a look at what they're doing and how they're growing, $16 million. And $11.7 million is tuitions. And then another $3.5 million is various related services. And we also have a program with Ledger for the VOAG, which is another about $500,000. On the administrative side, we have $2.9 million. And that is, a lot of that has to do with cost shares for the employees' medical that we pay. We pay, I think it's 17.5%. Then LEARN also has what we do is we do what we call an internal service fund for workers' comp and for unemployment. So we charge that, and that gets thrown into the administrative services bucket. The early care and education, $2.1 million. There we get some federal grant money. We get state-funded money for school readiness and preschool money from the state for TFS. The partners birth to three, $740,000. So as that is phased out for June 30th, 2020, this is, you know, for last year, 1920. We did have $619,000 that we received from the state there. And then we have some other contracts that we do that came out to the 742. Professional and career, that has to do with our Office of Teaching and Learning. And the virtual learning programs that we offer. The transportation, $1.3 million. We have a contract with Colchester. And that's almost about $1 million a year. And then we have the choice money that we get magnet school funding from the state of another $300,000. And the construction project, we finished up the Ocean Ave project, and we get reimbursed money from the state, $512,000. You're probably thinking it should be higher, but the year before that, we had a receivable set up. That's why it looks a little low. But that's our revenues by department. And then what we do is we just broke down what the funding for the magnet schools and the student support services look like by schools. So those are our two big revenue buckets. And then how does that money get distributed as the school for the schools? And so we have a chart showing that allocation.
And just for clarification, with student support services, this is Boston Post Road and Ocean Avenue, but it's also the special education services within the magnets. So we do bill by IEPs the magnet students that receive services. So that's another funding source that comes out of the magnets, but it goes to the SSS department.
And the idea of SSS, I look at that as a very an operational excellence. We talk about they're providing that, and that's a guiding light for our agency as to how they do things. They do things extremely well, and as they build that, you know, more revenue is coming, and our relationship with the districts and the reputation of what we do is excellent, and it's staying at a very high level, and it's continuing to grow. And that's why, you know, with the Ocean Ave Project 2, we're going to plan on having from 65 kids up to 100 kids providing additional services. So, you know, as we continue to increase our value in our products, you know, we plan to increase our revenue. The next slide, and it's a bit busy, is the salaries. And I'll be honest, the one thing, it kind of stumped me, and I still have to do some research on it, is on the employee benefits side, I've worked with the auditors, and, you know, when I look at it, we actually had a little bit less in expenditures than the year before. And that's really because we had a little bit less in revenues. And for a district, I've been doing this for a few years, and my districts, I never had less money in expenses from the year before. So we had a slight reduction in our total. The total on the right isn't shown, but it's 57 in change. And this past year was 56.3. So I do have to do a little bit more research on the employee benefits, why it spiked from 10 million to 14 million. These are all the different buckets of our expenditures. And when I tie it back to Munis, I still have, I have an allocation difference. So I have to better understand that piece of it. But all in all, our expenditures, you know, look good as a total. And you'll see later on in the meeting, we'll talk about salaries for all our employees. But our benefits for the medical are actually, as you'll see, from a reserve standpoint, we're on solid ground there. Due to COVID, we've really seen our reserve balances have gone way up. People are not going to visiting the doctors, et cetera. So we're on solid ground with all of our benefits. The next slide gets us to a pie chart of all of the various things, and you'll see that your salaries and your benefits are going to account for your largest piece. And in most districts, they're in the 65 to 75% range of your total expenditure. And then you'll have various things like other purchase services, your maintenance, utilities, and debt services if you have that. Some school districts that might be on the town side, but this is a breakdown with a pie chart look. The next slide, we talk about from an auditor's perspective, they want to make sure that your fund balance, they recommend that it's between 10 and 15% of revenue. Another way to look at it is on the expenditure side, it's between 8 and 17% on the expenditure side. We've talked about a development of capital reserves. When we take a look at the fund balance long term, we're on very solid ground, but just 8 years ago, we weren't. Okay, so 8 years ago, we started increasing our fund balance, and we've had a solid, consistent growth due to the enrollment in the schools and some really enhanced programs that the districts want. So let me just move my picture of the people to the other side so I can see this. So our sustained growth in the unrestricted net position, you know, we're progress toward full capacity in most magnet districts. This year, we are down at TFS and RMMS, but consistently over the last 7 or 8 years, we've had a very strong enrollment. Obviously, COVID is put a challenge to everybody, and definitely in the magnet school environment. Significant expansion. Whoops, I was just going to finish up that. Significant expansion in the Office of Student Supports. So we have added many services. I just know it is Dr. Gelbar and the other.
Dr. Spector.
So what the districts are wanting is high-level professionals, and we're able to provide that for our districts. And we're continuing to expand with behaviors. And, you know, I was on a call with Bridget just yesterday or the day before, and she said that, you know, some of the new students that we're getting require a lot of services, and we're able to provide those high level services. So that's going to continue with their expansion, continuation of the Magnet School Assistance Program. So our MSAP, every 5 years, this is a 5-year program. We're starting to think about what are we going to do next time, right? So We want to make sure that it's aligned. I know Rita Groton with the MSAP, and so we need to talk to our districts and say, you know, let's align together to figure out what the next one is and how is that going to help students the best. So that's some of the areas how, and you know, our unrestricted net position has grown. The next chart is, I had to laugh.
Mike, can you just give me that definition of unrestricted net position one more time?
Sure. It's basically unassigned, no strings attached monies. Fund balance.
Cash.
Money, is it profit?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
It's basically, yes. After, you know, from a district's perspective, unrestricted would be if you had a budget of $80 million and you had expenditures of, you were able to tax at $80 million, but you only spend $78 million, $2 million would go into your, if unless you had it earmarked for something, it would go into your unrestricted.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, got it.
And for our new board members, that's one of the biggest difference between a RESC and a district. You know, and a district sends the money back to your town, whereas, you know, when we have funds, at the end of a year, we can put it into a bank, literally. And so it allows us, especially last year was the first time we had the conversation during COVID of, can we afford to pay people? You know, do we have enough money to afford the payrolls for staff who weren't working? And having this, you know, for that situation, having this net position allowed us to make a decision to support our workers because we had a healthy fund balance. Mike, you ready?
Yes. So the next slide, I had to laugh because when I first came here, we were given an assignment in our interview process, and it said, what did LEARN look like? And when I talk about the fiscal state of LEARN, it really, this is it. It shows a very strong, healthy balance since 2013. Prior to 2013, when I take a look at it, I would say LEARN was not strong, right? We weren't healthy. We didn't have a strong fund balance. We weren't able to go out and recruit and say, how can we help you as well as we can today, right? So our goal is to use these monies to figure out how best can we help Southeastern Connecticut. And one of the things, you know, we're talking about obviously is Project 2 at Ocean Ave. But Kate and I, and I'm sure Bridget, Ryan, everybody, is saying, what else can we do? And right now, we have the ability to take a couple risks. One of the risks, and we'll talk about it, is we're starting a technology consortium. So here's some regional investments. Kate can talk about the teacher residency program, but these are some of the regional investments that we're doing, and we want to do more.
Yep. So we talk about, you know, again, it talks about the role of the LEARN board and directors and this idea of supervising and providing cooperative educational programs and services, you know, and that has been, you know, some of the reasons this board has made some great decisions with under Eileen's leadership around where to put our funding and investing, and Ocean Avenue just being, you know, the easiest one to talk about, but having some of the biggest impact on supporting our region. So we want to keep thinking about that idea of terminology of like, where else does LEARN, you know, invest in the region? So one of the areas I've been talking to you about the last 6 months is in the teacher residency program. So in order for that program to spread from CREC to LEARN and then CES and ACES, we agreed to support CREC because they had really put 100% of the funding in before without any state help at all. And so we're investing $45,000 just to give to CREC to be able to expand the program for Southeastern Connecticut. And now we see, you know, Groton, Norwich, Waterford has talked to us, East Lyme has spoken to us, Ledyard is on the table. And so what we have now is the ability to use this region, this investment to support the region and creating a pipeline for teachers. And we also see this as just an incubator for regionalism and partnerships. So from this, what we see is a real potential to do some teacher mentor programming and help our current teachers across Southeastern Connecticut just really work on what it means to be teacher leaders. I think that idea of constantly building the capacity of educators at all levels, whether they're beginning educators or they're veteran educators, is something that we're really excited about. And Mike started to mention this idea of a regional technology consortium. So as Cindy Ludi probably knows from her discussions in Preston, we were really lucky about some of our small districts. When they have a question or a challenge, they've been calling LEARN and saying, hey, how can you help us? So we had Salem and Preston at the same time talk to us about a real need for technology support. And especially under COVID and teaching virtually, they don't need just a break fix support. They really need help with networking and wiring and equipment and visioning for technology, not just and beyond the COVID experience. And so in these conversations that we've been having, and Mike's been involved and Jack Cross has been leading the charge, what we're able to see is this idea of LEARN being a technology service center. So we're going to start with two districts. We're about to do post two jobs that will be supporting the two districts. But what we're hoping is that we're going to create a critical mass and a tech team that can add more of those small districts, those districts that really, you know, they need a high quality 21st century technology, but the costs are prohibitive. And so I think we really can do some good work in creating cost-effective programming around technology support. So we're really grateful to both Roy Seitzinger and Joe Onofrio from Salem for just their desire to see this as at LEARN as a solution and to a challenge that they've been faced with. And then obviously the next project, you know, we're looking roughly at a $2 million investment in the second project for Ocean Avenue. And it feels, you know, like the right work for us, obviously, but it's one of those things where I said to Mike, I think LEARN needs to do a better job of talking about how we are taking our funds and really supporting regionalism in a strategic manner and not just, you know, throwing money out the window. But we're really excited about this project, and the next building committee meeting will be next Friday, and we'll talk about that timeline and how we can move this forward. But this whole concept of, you know, we have a board that really is a dynamic board and understands the power of LEARN. And so what we're really hoping is to capitalize on this fund balance and be very strategic in how we use this fund balance to you know, support education across Southeastern Connecticut. Any questions on that?
Sure. This is Tim Hagen from East Lyme. When you show the unrestricted net position or your reserve, your fund or whatever, have you deducted reserve funds for capital, for future capital investment? And then also, is the amount that you need to have set aside for making sure that you have cash to operate, is that pulled out and set aside as well, or is it all just lumped together?
So, it gets a little tricky with the fund balances, and I don't want to. So we basically, there's five buckets of categories within the fund balance. So it's non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned. So the majority of our money is in unassigned, but yes, it's, we want to make sure that, and the board has the authority and should, you know, I should bring to the board a listing of what we want to earmark that is committed, what is assigned, what is restricted, and let's be clear as to, for future things, what do we want to do not touch, right? So I'll bring to the board a clear item of what we have now and where we are with what's assigned, what isn't. As an example, I've got $347,000 that is assigned, and I did have what that was, but off the top of my head, I don't remember now. But yeah, let's make sure that everybody is on the same page with that. But at this point, the majority of funds is in the unassigned bucket. But you're right, the capital should be, right now I do have committed capital of $1,786,000. So we do have certain monies that have been approved and voted by the building committee through the executive committee and the board, those dollars. So, but we can do a better, you know, we can do a clearer vote and approach on that.
Yeah, Mike, do you have a, like you have to maintain a certain amount of cash to assure that you can meet payroll every year, do we have a target number for capital reserve fund that we would like to maintain for at a certain level such that when something bad happens that we have money that's there ready to go?
We do not have it in this regard, but I think what I have found to be successful is after your year end is done and you find out what your surplus is, if you earmark some of that surplus towards future capital. So that has been a successful model that I've used in my experience, whether it be the town or schools. So that means it's money that you have earned from previous years and you earmark it for future expansion.
Yeah. Do we have a 10-year capital plan?
We do not.
Yeah. Okay. You might want to think about
that.
The
goal would be to maintain a 5 or 6 year plan and roll it forward each year.
Yeah.
But we could look at a visionary 10-year plan.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, you got the marine science building in particular is, you know, it's aging. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, you had the same issue with, what was the one in RMS, right?
Yeah, RMS, yeah.
So anyway, it's when you see the scale of your operation and everything, you just start to, these things start to surface as being really important because you have a lot. So good, very good, Mike.
Yes.
And Mike has begun that's one of his goals is having each site has a 5-year capital improvement plan. So yes. He has the bones of it. We're just putting that together. So that way we don't want to be surprised by a roof project or, you know, those things we know will happen, but it won't catch us off guard.
Yeah. And to be honest, the board has already approved a set aside amount of $1 million a few years ago, which is still, we haven't used that up. And I have to admit, it's a nice position to be that what that thinking was done ahead of time. So it's great instead of being reactionary. So that is excellent. I just wanted one more thing just to update. Michelle Duthrie just mentioned to me, and we thought it was, but I wasn't positive. That adjustment for the pension for the benefits has to do, and I think the auditor did mention it now that I'm thinking about it, is that state teachers' pension in OPEB, we have to track it even though we're not liable for it. So that's why we had that increase in our books. It shows it high, but it's really just a pass-through to the state that has to pay the teacher TRB. So I got a little bit, I'm like, wait a minute, that didn't make sense. But now I remember Nicoletta mentioning that as well. That's all I had for the presentation. I think the last page talks about, questions. If you have any additional questions, and Kate, if you had any more comments.
Craig had a question.
Well, actually one comment first though, too. I would agree with Tim about, you know, doing a 10-year plan or even longer. At Stonington, we're doing a 20-year capital.
Wow.
Because as you pointed out, Mike, it does sort of sneak up on you if you don't. But the other question I had, too, related to the technology consortium, and just sort of generally, you know how we have a monthly superintendents meeting? Do we do sort of monthly or quarterly meetings for any other groups like technology directors or curriculum directors?
Yep. I don't know how quick, it might be monthly for the tech directors, but yes, our employee Pam Santier hosts that. And a lot of times they'll go to different sites, well, they had prior to COVID, and met and talked about their equipment, their technology, their layouts, their new tools, their software processes. So that group is a very active group. I would say last time I saw the attendance list, it was about 12 tech directors attending in the region. So they definitely are involved in the Southeastern Connecticut. But see, the ones who doesn't have tech directors are small districts. That's right. What's the challenge is that you don't have, you might have someone that can replug in a computer for you, a tech aide, but you don't have someone that can rewire your closets, that can talk about how many drops you need in a room for Wi-Fi, and those are skills and it's hard to find them without spending a good amount of money. You know, those are not low level jobs. So for Learn to get that talent in here and then be able to share it, you know, that knowledge base with those small districts, I think that's going to create, you know, an efficiency and just allow them to be really operationally more successful.
Do we do regular meetings for other functional areas like special ed, curriculum directors,
things like that? Business.
Yes. So we have multiple layers. I think we have we're up to almost 20 different groups. So we have speech and language get together, school counselors meet together, English language arts teachers get together, math teachers, science, assistant principals, elementary principals, middle school principals, high school principals, assistant superintendents and curriculum directors, business officials get together, which Mike leads that group. And actually John Spang does that. He's a real great partner with us on that particular group. So really what we find is if the region says to us, hey, we need to get together, we can make the group pretty much, you know, it doesn't take much to get that group going. So we've found that we like to be able to create groups based on need and likeness, like roles.
All right, honey. I think this is a good time to take a break. Yeah.
Can I have a question on the residency program?
Yes.
Was one of the intentions of that to promote teacher diversity?
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Okay, that's what I thought. And is there a recruitment effort in that? In getting diverse people into the program?
Yes. So this is multi-layered. So, you know, first we had to talk to districts to see if there was an interest. A lot of the districts that we talked to actually have the staff. They're already in what we would call a para role or an instructional assistant role, and they do have their bachelor's degrees.
Yeah.
And so what's really unique about this program is that it addresses the barriers that happen. So when you are making a salary of $30,000 to $35,000 a year, it's really hard to go to school and to afford a master's program. And so what this does is it really looks like it is a residency program. So Cindy, I don't know if you ever had student teachers, but when I had them, they would start like mid-September and they would end right like end of November. Well, they're missing like the big parts of the year. So this teacher residency program starts from day one. They work the entire year. And so part of the cost that you'll see, if you read the article, it talks about like a $60,000 cost. Part of that cost actually is the salary for that individual to work 180 days that year. So they are in a classroom, they are placed with what we would consider a high level teacher the whole year, and they go from the beginning to the end of the year with a with a class. And during the evenings, they are taking methods courses that we've designed that are really practical and turn around and they can use in the classroom tomorrow. And so it's about 18 months of support from the Learn side. But the idea is, you know, if Learn does this with one of our potential educators, the next year when I have an elementary opening, I can give that person a job. They know the school, they know their staff, their colleagues, they know the students. So they've already come and become part of our community. And when I was in New London, we struggled. We had such great diversity at our IS level. And our teachers, you know, 13% were teachers of color. So it was kind of like, well, how do you raise the bar? And what you're going to see is what I find powerful about this is I see this as an economic engine. Because you're taking people from a poverty wage and you're putting them into the teacher middle class, you know, and that and their potential for earning is really exponential. And they still are going to go, they're going to pass the teacher's tests. They're going to still hit the same bars that every teacher is reaching, but we're accelerating their ability to be certified. And then what they're going to need to do after that certification, they're still going to need to go and get their master's. That's something that we're not taking that bar away from them, but now they actually can afford it because they're making a salary that'll allow them the ability to afford a master's education. Right. So we're trying to really look at the dynamic, you know, aspects of this program. And so, and the other support is that when you take educators of color and put them in a cohort in Southeastern Connecticut, now they have peers. They have people that can share their experiences in their classroom and talk to each other and build camaraderie. So we're hoping that is good.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a wonderful program because I know we've been talking about teacher diversity for years and even in schools I've worked in, you know, we've had very few, if any, teachers of color or, ethnic backgrounds. And I know at one, I think it was a legislative breakfast I was at, and the question was, why aren't we hiring these people? And my question was, where are they?
Yes.
Anytime we had an opening and, you know, interview people, we had no applications, of diversity. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity. And in a way, it's similar to an internship program, but not the same. Because in an internship, you pay for their master's, but you don't pay them.
Correct. And that's what's hard is a lot of the kids that are in the Sacred Heart programs that do the internship, they're lucky they can live at home for the year. They don't need to pay rent, you know, but that's not everyone. And the bigger issue too in all of the nation is we're going to see in the next 5 to 10 years, a big teacher shortage. We've got to come up with real solutions of bringing high quality teachers into the classrooms. And, you know, and this is just one layer of how Learn sees itself as a partner. You know, the UConn program for special education is not going away. We still see that as a really valuable pipeline for us. But we just want to layer in as many programs and opportunities to ensure that we're getting a pool of teachers that are qualified, diverse, and really going to do good work for kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important thing to expose children to the real world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they go through their whole education and all they see are white teachers or, you know, and a lot of the kids don't have any relationship with people like that represent them more.
Yeah.
It's a different education.
Yep.
So 100%. Wonderful.
So I just want one kind of clarification. So it essentially is a certification program that you require the people that are in the program to already have their bachelor's. Is that correct?
Yes, they have to have their bachelor's. Yeah.
So it's really just, it's kind of like an alternative certification.
It is an alternative route to certification.
Yep. Right. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, great. Fantastic. I think that you're right. This kind of really speaks to the need that we have and the pool of people that we need to draw from to meet that need. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I just knew, you know, in New London, we worked so hard to recruit and we would try to go to Spain and get people who spoke Spanish to help us. We try to go to Puerto Rico. But the problem is there's no connection to your hometown. we all know that people who live in our communities will stay, they want to work in their schools that they went to. They want to work in their local areas. And so there's a sense of, to use a business term, a stickiness. Like when you bring in, you know, your own and grow your own, they're going to be with us and they're going to stay with us and grow as educators. And I think that has a lot more long-term potential to support us in our work than just flying people in. If I go, I can go down to Howard University and try to grab a teacher, but they're not from Connecticut. They're not, you know, they don't have any community to support them during, you know, good times and bad times. So this really is meant to help the entire Southeastern Connecticut community. And I think it's, I'm really proud of Ryan Donlin played a big role in building this when he was in CREC. And I'm excited that it's something we can be a part of. And yesterday I talked to Senator Berthol from the other side of the state. And he works for Post University and he just sees this as a great strategy for RESC Alliance to be involved in. So we're really hoping that there's going to be funding behind this. But at the same time, I don't mind putting, I think this is where LEARN should be putting some funding and putting our backing. So it's great to see a lot of people involved and invested.
Kate, I have a question really quick.
Yes, email me.
So does the candidate have to be a para? Can the candidate be a substitute teacher in a different district but lives in the district?
Yeah, you know what, that I'd have to ask Ryan. I don't know, you don't have to live in the district, so you don't have to be, you know, in from Ledger to work there. I think I'll have to get a definite answer from Ryan whether or not they were a para or not. They could be on the books. I guess I would say if they're employed by Ledger and Ledger puts them through that program, then that's fine. But sometimes that's typically where we're finding our candidates is in that IS para role because there's a sense of they want to be in the classroom. So substitutes I don't see is that too far of a stretch.
What I mean is a substitute in a different district, but not in Ledger, but she lives in Ledger and would like to work for Ledger.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a way for that to happen. I just don't have, I can get Ryan to get you that logistics of how that happens.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kate?
Yes, Rita.
Hi, Rita from Groton. I had a question to go back to revenues for Mike. Because dual language is now part of Goodwin, and they just had one grade this year, so you'll be losing the revenue from having the dual language magnet school. Will that benefit be offset by the rent you will no longer have to pay?
The rent was around $48,000 a year. So that is a factor of, you know, something we don't have to pay, as well as, you know, the electrical and components mm-hmm. like that. But it's not, there is a loss there that happens when we lost, I think it was a little less than $1 million budget, the dual language.
Right.
And so what happens for LEARN is as the students population grows at CTRA in Goodwin, we will get, we have a contract with Goodwin that we get paid $1,000 per kid. So that's where our revenue will increase. But we won't, it's hard to, it really was a pass through. Like when you had magnet money, you paid your staff. And so it wasn't like we were making money off of dual language. So that's what's going to happen with Goodwin. They're going to pay us to pay their staff. So it'll be still the same type of pass through. So it's going to be equivalent, to some degree of funding once they because they're going to be exactly the same size that dual language was. They're going to have 150 students, just like, mm-hmm. Just like dual language. But right, without, right. For us, without the stress of, is that roof going to fall down tomorrow?
Right.
So it did solve a lot of problems for us to not have that problem with a poor building.
Right. Yes, I realize that. I was just a little concerned. Down the line, do you see our relationship with Goodwin continuing?
Yeah, I can only go off of what Todd, who is the number two in Goodwin, he has talked about a commitment to learn, and he hasn't changed that. And I've talked about the fact that they went after an LEA identification at from the state legislators, and they did get that, but they really wanted that so they would be eligible for Title I funds, and that has mm-hmm. a potential to be around $400,000 to $500,000 that would go right to kids and wow. programming. So that, in my mind, that was the right move. I have no indication from Goodwin that they have a transition plan to move away from Learn. And I'll be honest, during COVID, we have been lockstep, the two programs, more so than ever. We have, Ryan and Bridget have been there twice a week, working and making sure that their practices and protocols are exactly what we're doing here at Learn. So there's been a lot of symmetry and partnership that even deeper than before. So I'm hoping they see the value in us. I think they do. We get a lot of really nice feedback from them. Right now I don't feel that's on the cusp, so I'll keep you posted as conversations change, yes. But I think
great news.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is great news.
Thank you.
I have a question, Cindy Ludi from Preston. I had a question regarding the budget for Mike, in terms of where we are due to virtual learning, if we hadn't been in virtual learning, and the expenditures of the budget, I would imagine, are different than we would have expected had we not been in virtual learning. Like, I know at our meeting the other night, John Fang was going over, face-to-face versus virtual, what we had budgeted for, what we've actually spent, and how we're ahead in certain areas and not in others. And I was just curious, in the Learn schools, I would expect that we're seeing the same thing.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. So, yeah, you're going to have a little bit, I think all the districts are seeing you're going to have a little bit less in various supplies and things like that. And also keep in mind that the ESSER funds, where we received $317,000, and the CRF funds, where we are receiving $1.1 million, each school district is tallying up all their COVID expenditures. And, the plan was that you submit the applications and you tell the state how much money you plan on spending. Like for us, that equates to about $1.4 million. So that is covering the bulk of all of our COVID-related expenditures. We did have a negotiation, and a lot of districts are negotiating with their transportation. Colchester's paying us 80% of the entire contract. But besides that, the state has committed all of the funds for tuition to us, and we're providing the reasonably equivalent services to all of our districts for all those services. So in that regard, we're staying the course. I know that some of the districts had surpluses last year just because a lot of folks were not in district. And so some, what I would call some operational expenditures, just didn't happen.
I think the biggest impact that we saw in this fiscal year came from not hitting enrollment targets.
Right.
So the Friendship School was short almost 70 students this year. And so at the end of the day, last time we checked, we're talking about a shortfall of about $400,000 at the Friendship School. And the reality is, it's hard to put 3 and 4 year olds in a hybrid program. That doesn't really support families, especially with that age group. Our families have been wonderful and they're working with us, but the reality was, families had to make a choice at the beginning of this year. And once they heard that we were going to be running a hybrid program, they opted for a different, type of childcare program for their child.
The other school that fell short for enrollment was RMMS. And not just RMMS, but we see this across the region. A lot of families opted for homeschool options. So they just didn't want to have to worry about COVID. And so they just were not sending their child to school at all. So that school is about, last time we checked, was about $150,000 short. We do believe that, you know, as there's natural ebb and flows of a school budget, and with a roughly RMMS is around $6 million. So they might, at the end of the day, we won't be surprised if they come out whole. And TFS, we'll see how, what we're going to get hit on is just the preschool funding, as well as that comes from the state, because we just don't have the numbers that we typically have. But we see that as a 1 year anomaly because of COVID. We don't see that as, there was nothing trending in that direction that told us that those schools were in trouble. Mm-hmm. It just really was a response to, or parents' response to COVID.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of budgeting for the future, and budgeting in terms of expecting face-to-face learning, I would assume, like with us, that there are areas where you're actually saving some money, like even in terms of supplies, or for us, transportation is a big thing, stipends for teachers, you know, things that aren't happening. Where does that balance off the money that you're not getting?
Somewhat. I don't think it's a total balance. I think where we find those savings is we have a lot of people come in and out for the IS positions. That's just a very transient job across all our schools and programs. So when you have vacancies, that's where we start to capture savings and capture and make strides in those deficits. And we have been able to be nimble with staffing. We just lost a teacher this 2 weeks ago. They moved to one of our regional districts. And that vacancy, I don't know, because of COVID, we don't necessarily have to fill that particular position. So that will be a way for us to catch up with some of these deficits.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions or comments for Mike?
Yeah, just a quick one. This is Amy Ordonez from East Hampton. When you were talking about the technology consortium, you had mentioned that there were two districts, and I caught that Salem was one.
Yep.
Can you just let me know what the other one was?
Sure. It was Preston Public Schools.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
Great. I think the next item is Craig from Stonington speaking. Next item on the consent. Agenda is the consent agenda items, and unless there is a interest in removing any of those items from the consent agenda, could I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as submitted?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor, aye, or wave your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries.
Great. Could I have the party that seconds that motion?
Can
Kristen
we
Peck and Guilford.
Oh, Kristen Peck.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is information from the executive director, Kate.
Sure. In terms of hiring, we have an announcement. Dr. Sue Iwanicki, who came and spoke to us, I think it was in October, she actually has been recruited and hired by Trumbull Public Schools to be their next assistant superintendent. Tomorrow is her final day here at Learn. She has been such an asset running RMMS and transitioning that school to an IB program, and then taking on the Office of Teaching and Learning with Ryan, and just leading a small but mighty team of educators, especially around this COVID. She's been a great connector for the region. And one of the things that Learn did for the first time, we have a tool called Thought Exchange, and it's not just a survey, it's actually, it's a way to measure like the collective will of people and where they agree. And so we put a thought exchange question out to the region, because this is one of those positions that really has to be responsive to the needs of the different roles and educators across our region from Guilford to North Stonington. So we were excited that we had 50 responses from educators. We had over 69 educators respond. We had 69 individual comments. And then what you can do on Thought Exchange is you can actually like star. So if Naomi put a comment in, I can hit one star, I don't agree, or I can hit five stars, I do agree. And so of the 69 comments, there were 728 feedback ratings for those comments. So we really could see what people were looking for in the next director of teaching and learning. So what's really powerful for us is we take this information, we match it with our internal needs, and we are able to create what's called a leadership profile. And that profile, as we go and we interview our next candidates in a couple of weeks, will be critical for us, you know, to use as a touchstone of who do we want to sit in that seat. And obviously, they have big shoes to fill coming in behind Sue, but we're excited about our process. And I think I had three assistant superintendents from the region reach out to me personally and ask to be a part of the hiring process. So we're going to actually use some of our regional leaders to help us vet some of these candidates that come through. So we're excited about that process. Good news is on Tuesday, the new assistant principal of the Friendship School, Mrs. Tricia Lee, will begin her tenure here at Learn. She is born and raised in New London Public Schools. She's been a first grade teacher in Bloomfield. And when she got this job through a great process, she cried. She was so excited to be coming home and to be working with New London families and at the Friendship School and the regional students. So we're really excited. I think she's a perfect fit for the staff, for the students and the families of the Friendship School. In terms of legislative updates, tomorrow Learn and MSSA and the CASA superintendents are hosting a legislative breakfast. We're hoping to have our reps from the region as well as our senators come here and talk to us. We're going to talk to them about, there's a new proposal from CAPS. I'm not sure how many of you have heard about it, but they are proposing a new funding model for the state of Connecticut. And that model is pretty dynamically different from what we have now. And it's pretty comprehensive. It's very well done. It's been 2 years in the making. So tomorrow there'll be a short presentation for the legislators from Dr. Freeman from Guilford and Fran Rabinowitz. And then there'll be some question and answering, hopefully, relationship building with our superintendents and the regional representatives and senators. We also, the RESC Alliance has a meeting today with the Education Chair Committee. And just talking about, we've tried to bucket our asks for this next legislative session. And the three areas that the RESC Alliance is unified in, it has to do with magnet funding. Magnet funding last term did get a 2% increase, but that was the first time magnet schools received an increase in almost 8 years. So they're hoping to kind of make some more, we're hoping to make some more ground with some magnet funding increases. The other advocacy that we're pushing for has to do with school readiness seats. One of the things that you'll hear from the Office of Early Childhood has to do with the fact that we all agree that school readiness is an important program to make sure our youngest learners get off to a great start. And creating more access and opportunity for students across the state. But that funding model has been stale and stagnant for over 8 years. So what we're seeing from our providers is they are at a critical mass of increased salaries and trying to retain staff on a budget that hasn't shifted at all in 8 years. So some of the language that you may hear if you're out in the political world is, we're not necessarily asking for more seats for pre-K across the state, because we just don't have the right funding right now for the current seats. This is something that we're in alignment with Beth Bai, the commissioner of the Office of Early Childhood, but we just feel like we want to support her in that message that it can't go that long without an increase and be sustainable for students. So it has the potential to fall apart if we don't put some funding into it. And the last area I did talk to you about with legislation had to do with teacher residency program and really one of the goals of the governor and the commissioner, who's going to be our Secretary of Education, which is unbelievable, wonderful, is this idea of increasing the diversification of teachers in the state of Connecticut. And what the Resc Alliance really, if we can get this off the ground, and there's a potential that we're going to be able to, between all of us in this next coming year, potentially put 40 educators into the pool for the 2021-2022 school year. So we're excited about, you know, being able to have a return on investment that legislators can be proud of, that their money's actually going somewhere and not just to a black hole of funding. Other work that we've been doing, I talked about the building project. Preston, thinking terms of, I think that's the bulk of the work that we've been doing. There's nothing that's coming across that's too huge. LEARN has been, I don't know, I think I talked to us about this last month, but LEARN's been hosting teaching sessions for families around technology. And so that's something brand new, is that our new online coordinator, not only are we supporting teachers, and the idea of, you know, how to maximize technology to engage students, but we're also doing some programming for families. I think we ran one in Guilford, and we're also running them in the LEARN region as well. And they are self-guided, as well as people have a number to call if they need support. So we call it the LEARN Family University, and we have some self-paced courses for our parents to support them in supporting their children online. And one of the, Mike Belden just reminded me, one of our newest innovations that's coming across is actually, we have some amazing teachers at Marine Science, and they've been there, they're on their 10th year, some of our teachers, and they've been using the amazing equipment that building has. They've been growing coral for the last 5 and 6 years. And we're right now at a place where we have too much coral, and we actually have to start selling coral. And there is this, I don't know anything about the fish world, but our teachers do. But there is a demand for coral out there. And Mike Belden is working with this team, and we're probably going to become purveyors of coral in the next 3 months. So if you're looking for some, we have it. It's going to go like hotcakes. So that's what I'm hearing, is this is something that there's not a lot of competition. And even more so, what we're really excited about is marine science kind of having this renaissance movement of not just being a fish school, but also having this entrepreneurial side for students to really get a sense of what it means to be in environmentally sustainable businesses. So we're excited. It's really at the ground level, but our teachers, the work that they've done and the product that they've created, it has a lot of potential. And what we see the next potential is, you know, fish sales. And when you talk to people like, Doreen Marvin, who literally was at the ground floor of the idea of this marine science school, these were some of the dreams that were originally put on the table by our partners and by our regional superintendent. So it's really exciting to see this come to fruition. So I will keep you posted on when those sales go live and when we're ready to allow you to shop for coral. So that's more to come there.
Kate, where is the fish being sold now? Marie Science.
I think one of them, and I don't know the name of the place, I think it's in Old Saybrook. There's a company. Yes. I can email that to you. Eric Litvinoff, our teacher there, has a person, he's just friends with the guy. And so I think we've been selling some of our fish to them. I know 2 years ago I was recruiting teachers and I met a young student from Norwich, and her parents own and ran a Chinese restaurant, and they bought all our koi. So I think they bought about 15 koi fish from us. So it's happened sporadically, but I think we're really close to going live and having, you know, an online order form. And so we have some foundations to build, but I guess coral is really, you know, hard to get, and it's hard to grow. But once you have it started, I mean, after 5 years, we really have a great product. So we're excited to see where this goes. And hopefully our students can really lead some of this, where that's what we're excited for, that learning opportunity.
And that'll cut right into your 400K deficit at Friendship School.
Yep. It's all, what goes around comes around. Yep. That's very true.
That's really cool. I think that's a great story.
Thank you. Yes.
Is there an unrelated business income implication with,
yes,
with this, when we start selling or running businesses?
Yeah, so Mike's looking into actually using the 403B, the Project Learn, as that mechanism. So he's still, that's where we're at. We're at that planning stage of what do we need to make sure that we're a legal entity, and that, you know, I don't think we're gonna be making maybe thousands of dollars, but I don't think it's going to be much more than that. But definitely we want to make sure we set up our business house. And Mike, did you want to say anything more about that?
Yeah, no, Craig, what I'll be doing is I'll be working with Shipman to make sure that we set it up properly. Right now we do have the Project Learn. It's a 501c3 tax exempt entity. And I've been working with Doreen Marvin, and her recommendation would be that would be the way for us to go, but we'll work with the legal team to make sure it's set up properly.
Right, my concern is that there might be some tax implications. Obviously you might have to pay tax on the sales and all that sort of thing. So as long as you're separating it out from the core structure, that's good.
Yep, thank you.
Any other questions for Pope?
Yes, this is Amy Ordonez from East Hampton again. I just had a quick question about the proposed CAPS legislation for the new funding model. Has that been made public? Is that something that you can send to us?
I will have, Donna has it all set. It just became public on Tuesday. Okay. So you'll get two documents from us. One is kind of an executive summary, and the other is the lengthy document. So you'll get both of them in Donna's email today, later today.
Wonderful. And then my other question is this something that you're going to be asking, like, the local individual school boards to help support, or is there going to be, you know, any push from the local municipalities or anything to kind of help that along if it's accepted?
You're talking about the CAPS proposal?
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're on an information, campaign right now. The superintendents just received the presentation maybe about 5 or 6 weeks ago. So they're just learning it themselves. But it is coming out of the CAPS organization. Fran Rabinowitz is a mighty leader. I can actually see if she can attend. I tried to get her to come to one of our meetings. She wasn't available, but I can have her come and present to this group as well, and talk about our efforts. But we are trying to have, CAPS is attempting to have all the superintendents on board with this. You know, you're going to actually see there's some other groups that are proposing some financial programs, but this really is comprehensive. Some of the players that wrote it were Ted Sergi, who's the former commissioner of education of the state of Connecticut, and Kathleen Gay, who used to work in OPM. So really big thinking and hopefully transformative thinking, and really trying to push the legislators not to put, you know, their thumb in the dam and really look more expansively. The one thing I can say without hesitation is in this plan, there will be no districts that actually lose funding.
Wow.
Now, okay. In other plans that are coming across, in order to create equity, some people gain and some people lose. And that makes it really challenging, you know, because there's very few legislators that are going to support something that hurts their you know, constituents. Right. So this is one of the selling points of this particular CAPS. And also, I just want to be really clear, it is an increased investment. It's not a zero-sum game. It is more money into education, but they feel that it needs to be. And what's nice for us as RESTs is there is an acknowledgement of a role that RESTs can play, and so they actually advocate for the RESTs to get some funding to do some adult ed programming, as well as some more regional work, especially around special education. So there's a recognition that RESCs play a role in cost containment for the state of Connecticut. So, but that's really, sorry, that's a really short summary. There's so much to it. It's pretty dynamic. Yeah. But I will have that for you today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That sounds really exciting.
It's a great question. Thank you, Amy. And I'm all set, Craig. That's all I have.
Okay. Any other questions, anyone, before we move on to old business? And we have two items for old business today. They're both policy approvals. And so let me start out with the first one. If we need a motion to approve policy number 3543.311, holds on the destruction of electronic and paper records. And so if I could have a motion to that effect.
This is Diane Linderman of Region 18. I'll so move.
And Rita Volkman, I'll second that.
Thank you. Moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Not, then could I have a vote? All those in favor, please say aye and wave your hands.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. The second policy. Motion is to approve policy number 3543.31, electronic communications use and retention. And if I got a motion to that effect.
So move, Cindy Ludi.
Thank you, Cindy. Second, anyone?
I'll second. Naomi Rodriguez Ledgerd.
Thank you, Naomi. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. That concludes our old business, and now it's on to new business. And the first item is salary and benefits. And Kate, would you like to anything about that?
Sure. So what we do, one of the roles that the LEARN Board of Directors has every year is to set the salaries for non-union members. So obviously we've played a role in negotiating our teacher salaries and our admin salaries, and now we have to talk about non-union salaries. So what you'll see here is our hourly rate. We have a variety of different hourly rates based on some the variety of roles that we have here at LEARN. One of the things that I think Nat Brown talked about it might have been 3 years ago, was this idea, the law but we have to get to $15 an hour by state law, and I think it's by 2023. And so what we're doing is we had a five-year plan to take our lowest paid employees and move them up. And we've been moving them up the last 3 years by $1. And we're getting to the point where we'll be all set for that state law and be in alignment to be at the $15 rate. So when we increase the bottom rung, what we see is then we need to smooth out the other hourly rates. And so what we've done is we've added 90 cents to the next level, 80 cents to the next level, 70 and 60 cents an hour to the next level. And so that is a way that we're trying to manage costs, but at least keep the ranges differentiated, but based on the roles and that people are playing. When people make above $23, our proposal today, this is something Christine and Mike Belden and I looked at. We really felt we could, based on the fiscal health and the results from the audit, that we could ask for a 2.5% increase on base salaries for non-union members. And so how does this look? So it looks like a $400,000 increase or $411,000 increase for non-union members. For our administrators, we have about 23 of them. The contract negotiated a $73,000 increase. And for the teachers union, I think we have around 228 of them. It was about $498,000 increase for next year. So totally, the increase of all wages across LEARN would be $983,366. So overall, holistically, if we took that increase, we're looking at a 3.25 increase for the agency and our salaries. So that is the proposal on the table. You'll see in your packet, there's some more back language in terms of if you wanted to know more dynamics of the non-union members, their insurance, the plan designs. A lot of the plan design, the way we do insurance is we just align it to what the teachers are doing in terms of their contributions and their coverage. And they also learn, we also do for staff that we do a contribution or a match to VALIC. I think that I'm just trying to think of something that might be different from your, from the contracts that you might have in your region. So that is the proposal that we have. Do you have questions for Mike or myself or Christine? One of the things that we are doing at LEARN is we're taking a hard look at our positions. So this year we have let go of, some positions based on the fact that we don't have people coming into this building. So we are trying to be more, really look at each role and ensure that that we're maximizing roles and responsibilities to be as fiscally conservative as we can be with our spending. No questions?
I have one quick question. Excuse me, Diane Linderman, Region 18. Is this for only full-time employees? Does it include part-time employees? And how does that also relate to benefits?
Yeah, so part-time employees, we have a small group of people who are playground assistants. And I don't know if they work 2 hours a day or maybe 2.5 hours a day. So they I don't believe that they are, actually Christine might be able to tell me this, but she might not know it. I don't believe they have benefits. I think it's half-time and above receive the benefits. It's a certain number of hours that you work make you eligible for benefits. But the majority of people do work, 35, 40 hours. We do have a ton of IS, what we call interventionists, especially when we talk about our special programs. Typically, when we bring students into the Ocean Avenue program or our Boston Bost Road, we almost always have to hire another interventionist because it's typically necessary to have a one-to-one. One of the things that we've been struggling with is always finding a pool of interventionists to work. So we've actually Bridget's team designed a CNA position, because especially for some of our students who are medically fragile and need some you know, toileting and some types of care that is really acute, it actually works out really well to bring in a CNA position. So it's relatively the same cost, but it's just a different skill set that allows us to have a larger pool of employees that we can find good people to work with our kids.
I interpreted Diane's question to mean, were there any, listed increases also account for any benefit increases or additional amount over what's shown there for benefit increases due to the wage increases? Like, will we have to pay out more Social Security or insurance benefits or something because of, maybe I'm misinterpreting that Diane's question, but that's what I thought she was asking. Does that represent all of the associated increases?
That part, I'm not positive. I wonder, I want to say I'm not sure about that. I don't know if Mike has a different answer than I do.
Yeah, so the other benefits piece, we actually kept things pretty simple and straightforward. The only increase we did was we increased the employees' percentage of cost share from 17.5 up to 18.5. Everything else stayed the same. I did want to just mention, and some of you were on the teachers negotiating team, as well as the administrative negotiating team, the teachers union. So when I look at that 325, our teachers union has a very high, what we call step cost. So our step cost is consistent, considerably higher than most school districts, which means our average teacher salary is considerably lower than most districts. So the increase on a percentage basis is higher because the majority of our folks are still stepping through, whereas in a lot of school districts, a lot of teachers have already reached top step, so the step costs are a little bit lower. So that's why our percentage is a bit higher than what we had originally kind of had in our head.
Any other questions, folks? Anyone? Okay. Since there's no other comments at this point, I would look to have a motion to approve the proposed 2021-2022 salary and benefits as presented.
Craig, this is Rita Volkman. I'll second it if Naomi wants to do the motion.
I'm sorry. Naomi Rodriguez from Ledger, I am so moved.
And Rita Volkman will second that.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by aye or thumbs up.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. The next item of new business is the proposed 2021-2022 Executive Committee and Board meeting dates.
Yep. So I put them on the board for people to review. The one thing that we wanted to talk about was the November date and the board's feelings about the fact that currently that stands on Veterans Day. And so I wanted to make sure if we needed to make the adjustment on dates, we could do it sooner than later if people felt so moved.
Kate, the one item I would add to the November meeting that often happens is that typically the CABE meeting is in November.
Yeah.
In cases where
the
general meeting or sometimes the executive meeting conflicts sort of with the CABE annual meeting. So I just would factor that in as we discuss this as well, too. So,
If we did, if people did not want to do November 11th, if you go towards Wednesday, Craig, I think that would not conflict with CABE, because typically CABE starts Thursday night into Friday, I think.
So it's just a matter of people's preference of keeping it on the Thursday, which would be Veterans Day, or a possible move for November 10th.
I would favor moving it to November 10th or another date, but I would go with what the board votes for. So,
This is Cindy Ludi. I would go along with that, because not only that, you know, if traveling becomes possible again sometime next year, too, some people may be going somewhere. I think it would interfere with things. So I'm with Craig. I'd move it to the 10th too.
Yeah, this is Tim Hagen from East Lyme. We have East Lyme puts on quite a number of activities at the various schools, and the board members, several board members, tend to participate in some of those activities, and they're usually in the morning. So,
great.
I agree.
Yeah,
I would. And say- also, yeah, and also the executive committee date, moving it to the day before, so it's not on a Friday morning, but on a Thursday morning, the 18th.
Sure. Okay, that's great. Diane, did you have a comment? Sorry.
No, I was just agreeing to moving the board meeting to the 10th. I think that's a good move. I would support that.
Craig, we just need a motion, I think.
Yeah, is any other discussion then before we but we can have a, I guess, a motion to approve the 2021-2022 meeting for the Board of Directors and Executive with the
I'll make that motion. It's Tim Hagen from East Lyme.
Great. Thank you.
Diane Linderman, Region 18, I'll second that.
Are you okay, Cindy?
Yeah, I'm okay. I thought I was doing it. I'm so sorry. Okay.
We don't want you to die on Zoom.
I don't have a cough.
All right. All those, any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Thank you all. Next item is, includes our new business. Next item is educational perspective. And we were going to quickly look at the executive director's mid-year review. I think there was a copy of that included with the notes. Kate, do you want to say anything at this point before?
Sure. I have a, sorry, I forgot to put my quick little PowerPoint, just to be a little more succinct. Find it. Oh my gosh, this computer, it's interesting how you can't see screen, you have two screens and you can't see what you need to see. All right, so here we go. So basically what I wanted to do is create a summary for the group about what's been happening from the, you know, over the last 6 months. It seems like a blink of an eye since the beginning of the year, but there's been a lot of work that's happened. So really, really excited about the work that we're doing. And so there's three goal areas that the board, you know, evaluates me under. The first being educational leadership, and this idea of establishing and maintaining high quality relationships that support the vision of the agency to innovate, connect, and serve the educational community. And so there's been a lot of shifts that after my first year, I made some shifts in my own leadership. And one of them had to do with creating a pretty broad stroke strategic plan under the three goals. And so for me, I really wanted to be more clear about where I wanted in the three goals that LEARN have to do with schools, our programs and services, and then our operations. And for each of those buckets, I really wanted to have more clarity about where we wanted to be in 5 years. One thing that I observe, having been in the agency now for 5 years, is that a lot of the work can be person dependent. And so whatever that person's skill set or whatever they're really good at becomes the work. But when the person leaves, that work stops. So to prevent that sense of stop and start with talent, me being really clear about where we're headed in the next 5 years. For our schools, a lot of that is creating more equitable practices across the schools. Some of these things, a lot of schools talk about science SRBI, and we're shifting more to what we call a multi-tiered systems of support. And we're starting to build the capacity of our schools around, like, all right, so what's the difference between the two programs and how do you build it? And how does it address the whole child? And so that's some work that we're starting. And what we're really continue to do in the agency is to integrate our work. So you'll see Bridget and Ryan have become really educational partners and leaders across the agency in this work. And so what I've made a real focus and a real put a lot of attention to is how we work also can have unintentional consequences for how we treat children. So by integrating our student support services with our general ed, what I'm trying to prevent is this sense of marginalization that happens, you know, traditionally with kids. And so this idea that we're going to look at all kids all through all of our different lenses and all of our different skill sets to really address the needs in each of our schools is a bit of a mind shift that we're working on. And that's just one of the examples of the improvements that we're making in the area of goal one. In goal two, I really am trying to push for some learning opportunities that are created as a response to what the need of the regions are, but it's twofold. There's this desire for me to make sure people know who LEARN is, and when you come, not that everyone's going to be able to attend a learning opportunity, but what happens is you get to know our staff. And I think that's where the richness of LEARN comes through, is those relationships, and people start to see us as thought partners in this work rather than, you know, the experts. Because at the end of the day, there's no such thing as experts. We have expertise, but we're not experts in all of these fields. And so really as a way of ensuring that the region knows that we have different skill sets and expertise, and they can call us when they need them. And the last, that's just an example of what you'll see in my strategic plan. The other thing that's happening in terms of how we're operating is I've done a lot of work around equity in the last 18 months. And when I was going to write the strategic plan, what I was struggling was with this idea of where does equity land? How does it fit in a strategic plan? And how does it become a bullet? And then do I talk about math? And then do I talk about, you know, supports for teachers? And then do I talk about the region? And so I was really struggling with that. And what I found was we really just have to put equity in our mindset. It has to be the lens that we do all our work. And we really have to challenge ourselves to really make sure we're being inclusive in our thinking and making sure we're being inclusive in our hiring and diversifying our staff and so that we really can do the work effectively. So one of the programs that I felt last year that I needed more support as a leader, a first year leader, from other superintendents. So selfishly, I created a superintendent's community of practice. With a professor from Harvard, his name is Lee Title, Dr. Lee Title. What we did was we created a cohort of superintendents that joined us this year. And we've been having some really rich discussions about not just race, racism, and equity, but the practice of it. So what does it look like when you do equity work in your district? And that's been a great support mechanism. It's been really exciting, actually. Lee Title asked this group if he could write an article for school administrator on this community of practice. So that is going to be, there'll be an article about the community of practice and about Learn's role in creating it coming out in February. So really excited about, you know, possibly even taking this to our national AESA and maybe offering it nationally with Dr. Title. So some exciting ideas around that. And what we're seeing more and more with the Office of Teaching and Learning is with COVID, they have been very nimble. They've done a ton of work next to Ryan for, with the schools. They've supported us building an instructional frame for how we're gonna teach in a hybrid model. They've supported online teaching, and our teachers have, you know, a hotline literally for technology, and they get weekly little 5-minute tip videos on the latest tool that they can use. And that's been really a good support for us. We've also built the State Department starting this summer asked us, the RESC Alliance, to build the blended learning modules. So these modules were built by the RESC Alliance, and now we are getting coaching opportunities. So any district across the state can call any of the RESCs and they can get free coaching on the blended learning modules that were created by our RESC educators. And that's something the state is funding. We've been putting out the information to our districts, and I think we have about 4 or 5 districts who have signed up so far for the free training from the State Department. And as I mentioned before, we've been really thinking about all the different stakeholders, from our own teachers to the regional teachers to our superintendents, and obviously to parents as well. So we're really trying to make sure we address the needs of the entire region. The Office of Teaching and Learning has done some really great work around equity. And they were supposed to have some day-long sessions prior to COVID that they turned into our lunch and learn sessions. And they bring in some leaders in areas, and they've been talking about trauma, housing, refugees. And these topics are, we've had about on average 40 attendees of pre-K providers come and listen. And so it's been a really dynamic group, and we're going to build some more lunch and learns for the spring based on topics that our region's looking at. And from Mike, and when he came in, we talk a lot about at Learn this mentality of a business strategy framework. It's a mini business course that we took this summer. Mike took it with our leader from the Office of Teaching and Learning, with our leaders, our director of Young Children and Family, and Bridget and her team. And it constantly is asking us, you know, how do we find those next opportunities? What is the next investment that we will make, and how do you do that? And so it's a 4 or 5 day session on how you create, capture and deliver value for this region. So that's been really a nice touchstone. And Mike, I'm so grateful for his partnership, because he just has grabbed that and he's owned it. And that's what the work that they've been doing with the Coral project is. They've been going through the business strategy framework together and asking those questions: who are the competitors? You know, does this fill a need? How does it fill it? Is it cheaper, or is it something that nobody else does? Who might be our competitors? So it's really great thinking in terms of business strategy that we've been just support. I continue to support. And one of the really powerful things that we're doing as a RESC Alliance to solidify our stance with the State Department is we've invested in a learning management system. So we are asked to create all these learning opportunities for the Bureau of Special Ed, for the Office of Early Childhood, for the State Department of Education, and now even for Aging and Disabilities Bureau. And all these things have to live somewhere, and they have to exist somewhere. And so now across the 6 RESCs, we have bought Canvas. And so it is like a Google form on steroids. And so what it will allow all of the 6 RESCs is to have access to our materials, to house our learning, like our learning curriculum for teacher residency program will be in there. We can share sources easily. We can do high quality professional development with this tool either virtually or in person. It allows teachers really easy access to the materials from that learning environment, but we're just trying to upgrade our operations. So what we want the State Department to see us is not only do we have the knowledge, but we have the technical ability to make sure we're promoting from to every corner of the state, you know, the educational initiatives that are coming out of the State Department. In terms of operational management, we continue to work as across the agencies and break down those silos. I started that last year, and we've seen a lot of partnership coming out of the Student Support Services and the Office of Teaching and Learning. Even the Young Children and Family Group, what we're realizing is a lot of the work that the Office of Early Childhood from the state wants to do is actually for students with or young babies with special needs that are identified already. So we have that expertise, we have that knowledge, so we can help the Young Children and Family Department in supporting the Office of Early Childhood. So we're really seeing that if we break down the boundaries between these different offices, we're much more dynamic and nimble and able to help, whether it's the region or the State Department in our work. And again, with Christine coming on board, it's been such already a great partnership with her and the business office. Again, Christine comes from a background of having been the business official in a school. So it really helps when somebody can speak the language of payroll and taxes and FFCRA and all of those things. One of the things that I forgot to mention, our big decision for Learn was what are we going to do about FFCRA? And as many of you know, the Congress, I think, inadvertently canceled FFCRA, or they let it die out with the second bill, the second CARES Act. And so it all of a sudden became our decision whether or not we would continue to offer the benefits, the 80 hours of non-sick leave, the extended FMLA, those programs. And after long conversations with both Mike and Christine and our team, Learn's stance is really going to be that we're going to continue to March 31st with these programs. And part of the reason is does have an equity lens. We offered all of these benefits under when it was a 1% contagion rate, when the pandemic was at the least threatening. We are hearing that we're not even at the peak yet of this pandemic, and to take these benefits away, we're just, as a group, we feel that we don't want to do that to our staff, and that's something we called some of the other RESCs. Each RESC is kind of doing their own thing. CREC is maintaining FFCRA, ACES is not. So there's not one universal way to look at it, but this is the way that Learn has opted to go. And, you know, again, with the hope that we can see a horizon with these vaccines coming and we can turn the corner on these things. And again, for operational management, things move well when we have great leadership, and bringing in the high quality people such as Christine is a critical aspect of our work. And Patricia Lee is going to be such a great asset to the Friendship School. And again, the new talent that we're going to bring in under the Regional Teacher Residency Program, we're really excited for. Another big operational management that the board has been such a great partner with is getting to this project number two. So you will see that we are ready to go, and we'll be putting this to work, hoping to break ground, you know, as early as this summer. So we're excited and raring to go. And then the technology supports, again, not just the operational management of our Learn work, but also those in the region. So we're hoping to, if we can really do great work within our agency, we can turn that externally and do the same supports. Christine just had a meeting yesterday with Preston. She's going to become part of their HR team and their bi-weekly conversations, just talking about HR practices and payroll issues, and just another team member to help support high quality work in Preston Public Schools. And finally, the last goal has to do with community and relationships. So again, one of our most important relationships is Eastern Connecticut Health Medical Cooperative. Mike mentioned before, it is in the best position it's ever been before. And we're really excited. The members in that group are really proud of this cooperative and what it's doing for their district. So we're excited that that's working well for everyone. The development and the creation of the renegotiation of the teacher contract, our teachers are still smiling with, and they're still happy with us over that contract negotiation. They were just really pleased with the tenor of the conversation and just the outcome. They were really happy that they felt supported by the LEARN board. Really proud of the fact that we created, and the administrators did a great job of giving us a foundational contract that we could work with, and our team came across with a payment plan that doesn't break our bank but gives us some flexibility and competitiveness in our administrators' pay. So we were happy with that. We went for a joint with Child and Family Agency. We went for a joint grant, a Cigna grant, and unfortunately we just found out yesterday we did not get that grant, but what we're trying to do is bring wraparound services from Child and Family Agency to Ocean Avenue. So we're not going to stop at the lack of getting the grant. We're going to continue to push that venue, but that is an agency that is such an asset to Southeastern Connecticut, and we're really looking to partner with them more deeply. And so is the City of New London. We had some really exciting conversations with Jeannie Milstein from the City of New London about this partnership with Child and Family and just creating more and more supports for New London families in Southeastern Connecticut. I did get a chance to meet Tracy Espy from Mitchell College. She's the brand new president of Mitchell College. I'm excited to talk to her and our team. I've been able to have different leaders reach out and talk to her team about potential partnership opportunities. So we want Mitchell at the table. And UConn, as always, has been such a great partner. They continue to help support our special ed certification program. They also are at the table with us, and LEARN is, Ryan and Bridget are trying to develop a teacher mentor program to complement the teacher residency program. And we're actually going to partner with UConn professors on that one. So we're excited about constantly bridging the gap between higher ed and what K or pre-K 12 is doing. So I try to be short and sweet, and I don't know how to be short and sweet. So that's the last 6 months in a nutshell. There's, you know, the reason why LEARN is doing well is there's a lot of talent in this agency. And I, when Mike talked about the amount that we pay for salaries, every salary has a potential to serve this region. And so I keep thinking about what's the next asset that we can bring to this region and support all of us as we do this work together. So I'm just grateful for this opportunity. And I know I'm blessed when I look at our board and how engaged you are and invested you are in this work that we do. And I'm just really grateful for that.
Kate, thank you very much. Members have any comments or questions for Kate? That was very...
Sorry about that. Kate, this is Rita. I have a quick question. I mean, this was a wonderful presentation, and thank you for all the work you've done. Is there still talks with the Coast Guard Academy for when the new museum is going to be built? I remember that they were going, LEARN was going to be doing the educational aspect of that.
Yeah, and that was spearheaded by Jack Cross. It got really quiet. I don't know if it was a result of COVID, but we did bring together educators last fall, and they did some framing out of some educational perspectives, and then I have not heard back from them. So our hope, I can reach out to Jack too and see if he's heard, but that's something I have not heard. Actually, another group that wants to talk to us is the COGS in Southeastern Connecticut. They're Connecticut Organization of Governments. Is that what that COG stands for? But they want to talk about more regionalization practices and how LEARN can play a role with that. But the Coast Guard seemed to be a really perfect lane for us to be involved in. I don't know. I've heard that's kind of stalled. The whole project has stalled, but I haven't seen anything in the paper lately. I didn't know if anyone else has, but I'll get some information on that one.
Thank you.
Kate, this is Tim Hagen from East Lyme. Great presentation. I really I'm amazed at how much you can do under the situations. It's fantastic because the organization is not stagnant by any means, and kind of sitting waiting for the pandemic to disappear. You really have things moving. Just one comment. I noted during Mike's presentation when he showed the mission vision slide, you know, with all the stuff on it, that under the core values, we have diversity that's listed. But I was wondering if you might want to just make a note. You may want to strengthen that or have a conversation which embraces more around not only diversity but equity and inclusion. Because that first part of your little speech you gave, you really hit on that hard, and it sounded like you were it was feeling like you really want to embed that as a core value in the organization. And the slide doesn't really it kind of touches on it, but it really doesn't get it. So you make a note when you're going to redo that or whatever. It's something to consider.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad you said that, because to be honest, that's actually what our staff has said to us, is that it's not, our commitment isn't out there enough, and we're not putting ourselves out there as equity, you know, leaders and partners. And so so one of the things that I've just started, I stopped talking to a marketing group called Miranda Creative out of Norwich. And I think we're going to partner with them and really start to, two things I'd like to work on is our mission statement. I think that we're missing, we say what we do, but we don't say who we are. And I think that's something that has to come across in a short, you know, almost like a tagline type of component. And I also agree with you that we can really be a little bit more targeted about our equity work, because I feel, I mean, when we have this vision statement of ensuring all students have access and opportunities, right? That is equity. That is literally the definition of equity. So now we have to, like, my personal goal is, how can I actually show you action steps that are connected to that, so that you can hold me accountable to that equity work? Because I don't want beautiful language, but empty promises. I want to be held accountable to be able to say, what are we doing to support all learners? And it's gonna look different at each level and for each part of our agency. But I really think that it's a driver for continuous improvement. It's a never ending challenge, right? We're never going to be done doing this, but it's an exciting challenge. And for our staff, this is where their heart is, and this is where they want to be. You know, that's why they come to Magnet School. That's why they work in our Office of Teaching and Learning. But we are learners. What's hard is that we don't know more than somebody else on equity. But we gotta name what we do know, and then keep growing and pushing ourselves to be out in a forefront and vulnerable about what we don't know. You know, and who else do we need to partner with to fortify that aspect of the agency around diversity?
Good, very good.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions or thoughts for Kate? Yeah. Because we've sort of reached the end of time here, I wanted to just move on to quickly look at the next item, which is roundtable future agenda items, and give that a few minutes attention, but then we'll have to adjourn. So if there's anything people want to say or comment about lessons from COVID-19, regional efficiencies, and tracking learning loss regionally or in-person education, please do so now. And if anything we don't cover, we can move to next month's meeting.
I had a question for Kate. I saw today in the paper, this is Rita from Groton, that New London and Montville were, at least New London, was closing schools until the end of January. Does that affect the regional multicultural magnet school?
So yesterday, I was grateful the superintendent from New London had reached out and let me know that they made that decision. That was based on a need for a large number of staff to quarantine due to close contacts. So I was wondering if she was doing that because of community spread, because I would think that we should close, but it really was a staffing concern that they had. And so that led me to stay open. And
okay. So we was just curious.
Yeah.
Because I know you follow them on snow days and different things, so.
I know, this COVID has broken all of our practices. So, you know, we tried to stay in line with them, but it just, you know, there were times where we had to close because of staffing and they didn't, you know, so it's just, this has been a unique situation. But I'm really grateful between Cynthia and Kate McCoy, the two leaders over there, they're very communicative. So we're not left in the dark, because I was ready to say, oh my gosh, do we have to close through February? But it really was specific to their needs of their staff.
Thank you.
This is Cindy from Preston again. I think one of a good topic that we could delve into is the tracking of learning loss, not only tracking it, but what are we gonna do about it? And I know for us in Preston, Roy is seriously considering, which we all support greatly, a summer school that is really educationally focused summer school that will help to remediate some students and hopefully we can service many students. But also we're looking at maybe during the rest of the year having students who have fallen behind, which there are a significant number of those students, maybe going to a support class rather than taking the Spanish class this year. So that's some of the things that we're looking at. And I think it might be a good idea to kind of discuss what other districts are doing to look into that. Also, we find out, you know, we do have to take the state test this year. And what is that going to look like? Supposedly it's not gonna count in terms of comparison groups and things like that. And I'm not against it. I think it might be a good idea to do that just as one snapshot of where the kids are, where we need to go, and how much loss there has been, but certainly not to put a great deal of focus on that one, you know, standardized test, and when there are many other ways we can look at kids and what's happened to them, not just educationally, but in, you know, when you're talking about anxiety and social and emotional considerations, there's a great deal of effect that all of this has had on kids in all grade levels. So I think that might be something interesting for us to discuss.
Great.
Any other comments from folks before we adjourn? Thank you all again for attending and your participation and input. If I could have a motion for adjournment.
So move, Cindy.
Thank you, Cindy. Second, anyone?
I'll second that.
Naomi or Rita, whoever wants to put the honor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. Happy New Year once
again. Thank you. Nice to see everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Stay well.